I'm Pig Don Luca, smoke you like my hookah. Yeah. Pump fake right, then I step back in and lose you. That's a boss move maneuver, billionaire entrepreneur. Mark Cuban on the viewer, put you rookies on a skewer. I stay shitting on you boys like I came up from the sewer. Used to have a lot of doubters, now I got a lot fewer. What you saying to me? I hope you save it for me. I'm about to kill the game, and I put it in my testimony.
All right, welcome to the Mainstream Mass Podcast. This is your host, Will. I'm joined here by my co-host, Jaren.
What is up, guys?
And as you can see, Jaren is out here, you know, sporting the Straight Up Texas apparel. Shout out to the Texas Rangers, who are moving on to the ALCS versus the Houston Astros. You know, hopefully it goes better than the last, you know, Dallas-Houston playoff series that we had. And I believe that was the last time the Mavericks faced the Rockets in, like, 2015. James Harden, absolutely, just, you know, single-handedly with his supporting cast of, like, DeMontis, Monty Unis, and just a bunch of sharpshooters, just absolutely depleted the Mavericks. And that Rajon Rondo-led squad, for anybody that has fond memories of that time period. But luckily, you know, we're on to bigger and better things, so we hope. But unfortunately, the Mavericks have lost the last two preseason games since we last spoke to you guys. Obviously, we covered the Mavericks' first preseason game in Abu Dhabi versus the Minnesota Timberwolves that they lost 111-99. Since then, they lost another one to the Timberwolves, obviously, in Abu Dhabi, and they lost to Real Madrid in Spain yesterday. We're recording this late Wednesday night, so that would have been obviously Tuesday. But they lost to them 123-119, and Kyrie Irving did not play. He's not played in the last two games. Luka only played the first few minutes of the Real Madrid game, but he is being troubled by a calf strain right now, so doesn't appear to be serious, luckily, but there was a little bit of a, I guess, sort of a gray area on that subject yesterday that definitely had everybody worried. So we'll definitely talk a lot about Luka and Kyrie's injuries, respectively, because those could definitely obviously change the scope of the start, you know, the start of the season. But, you know, more so specifically, you know, with Kyrie, because we really don't know the extent of this injury. The Mavericks could just, you know, be taking, you know, a cautious course of action here, you know, with a veteran player, especially during preseason, maybe just has a little bit of soreness. They don't want it to, you know, expand into anything larger than it is. That obviously could be the case. But you know, Mark Stein did not have the most encouraging things to say when he went onto the Bally Sports Southwest broadcast during the Mavericks game versus the versus Real Madrid the other day. So there's definitely some, you know, sort of worrisome discussion. There's a lot of different, you know, takeaways from these preseason games that I think are maybe sort of developing you know, subject matters that we can kind of take away, but you know, we obviously still need to put the asterisk, you know, on these games. And, you know, granted, it is just preseason and it's not, you know, it is, you know, essentially kind of just exhibition basketball. Nothing holds any weight right now. And, you know, obviously teams aren't playing their, you know, full rotation, you know, trying to win the game every time. So, you know, there is that aspect of it. But, you know, the optics of losing to an international team, you know, just being an NBA team, even if it's in a preseason contest, or obviously usually not the best. That's not by any means a discredit to, you know, teams like Real Madrid or anything like that, because, you know, arguably they're better than a lot of NBA G League squads. But the, you know, the, it definitely isn't something at the NBA level that you want to see. I kind of went on a big tangent there in terms of, you know, what's been happening with the Mavericks the last, you know, few days, especially with some of these games. Jaren, did you want to fire off anything in terms of, you know, any quick thoughts before the intro, or I mean, before the ad break?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, I know that we'll get into a lot of what we're going to discuss later in the pod, but, you know, I just really quickly did want to touch upon, like, yes, you know, these are preseason games. These games do not matter. You know, I think, of course, there's more experimental things going on rather than, of course, attempts to win. But I think it says something whenever, you know, a San Antonio Spurs team who, you know, of course, they're run by, you know, Greg Popovich for obvious reasons, but they also have rookie Victor Wembanyama, who looked amazing. But I think it says a lot whenever that team looks more organized And honestly, just playing a lot more better than a Mavericks team that's already played three preseason games. And not to say that they look disorganized or anything like that, but I think that there's a lot more question marks coming out of this road trip than there was kind of questions answered. I mean, you know, it was going
to
be a tough
say that there's a lot more question marks before, you know, compared to when the road trip started in terms of, you know, maybe the depth of this roster. But obviously, you know, as we did talk about, you know, we don't want to have that, you know, the cliche overreaction of, you know, saying anything's definitive or set in stone yet. But I mean, to everybody's point on Twitter, you know, we hear all the fan outbreak. You know, it's not the end of the world yet. Obviously, it is preseason, but I mean, we're not, you know, we're definitely not blind to the fact that things are not looking as good as they should on paper, I guess.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, I mean, that's essentially what I was going to say. Like, I feel like now that Luka has that calf strain where he, quote, said that it really wasn't anything important. That's basically what he said. And then on top of that, you know, you have Kyrie Andrews' groin injury. Doesn't look like anything serious as well. Both those guys should be back for the start of the season. But again, the last time Luka had a calf strain was, I believe, in March of last season, and it took him around 2 weeks to get ready to play basketball again. And this happened, I think, 2 weeks to the day before the season was going to begin. So, I mean, a lot of concern there. But again, you know, I'm going to hear him out. And of course, he's the one with the calf strain. So I'm going to hear him out. And he said that it was really no big deal. So I'm not going to be too worried about that. But I mean, look, I think that things need to be on the turn. I know that the Mavericks, since landing back from Madrid, which would be, I guess, today, they have a 3-day break where they will not play basketball, at least as a team. They won't have
organized practice. Mm-hmm.
Yes, for 3 days. So I think it was it Friday that they could start practice again. So honestly, I think that'll be a nice 3 days off for everybody. As they
might
were
be Saturday,
there, basically. Yeah, it might be Saturday, yeah. Actually, but it'll be a nice, much needed few days off for this team. So we'll see if they can get back, reorganize before that October 20th match against the Detroit Pistons, which will round off their preseason affairs. And then that pretty much leads the way to their October 25th match against the San Antonio Spurs. So
which yeah, I didn't even realize, for, you know, to your point that it was that many days between games for the Detroit game. I mean, I hadn't looked up the date of the Detroit game yet, and obviously a lot of other NBA teams, you know, had that sort of built-in break before, you know, the Mavericks ended up kicking off preseason earlier, obviously, because they were traveling internationally and stuff. But as they point out in some of the broadcasts and everything, it was the, I think, longest preseason trip and maybe all time, but
I think it was all time.
Yeah,
I think
we
played the most games overseas in a preseason. Like I think that we knocked off a lot of records.
Yeah. So, and it apparently took a decent toll on the team per Mark Stein. So we'll get into the, all the semantics of the Mavericks preseason situation and the international travel and everything like that. But before we do that, here is an ad from our sponsor, Spotify for Podcasters. All right, Jaren. So, getting into it, let's go ahead and cover, you know, the sort of most pressing topic, I guess, which is both Luka and Kyrie's injuries. Kyrie Irving, of course, has groin soreness. I don't know why I stuttered so bad trying to say this, but he has groin soreness. And as has been reported, you know, obviously in the injury reports of the last two games and by Mark Stein on the Valley Sports South West broadcast. Obviously Kyrie and Luka are both out, you know, with their calf strain and groin soreness respectively. And according to Mark Stein, he said that it sort of seemed like it was an indefinite thing and they'd evaluate both of them when they got back to Dallas. It obviously came out that Luka's injury isn't too serious, of course, according to him, is in his post-game injury or post-game press conference rather. After the Real Madrid game. So, Jaren, what are your thoughts on both of those injuries? What do you think of the severity of both of those injuries? And do you think it's going to play into the Mavericks' start of the regular season?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at, I guess I'll discuss the Kyrie Irving injury first. This is the latter of the two that I'm least concerned about. I feel like Kyrie Irving's groin injury is more of a one-off scenario. I don't know exactly when it happened. I don't know if it happened.
I mean, is it labeled as any sort of injury, or is it just soreness?
I think it's just soreness. I don't know if he got, you know, like hip, like, or knee on thigh. I don't know if it was something like that, or if it was just, you know, throughout practice, getting back in the swing of things. I really don't know. But it's kept him out of the last two games. I assume, just because it is soreness or labeled as soreness, I assume he'll play in that last preseason game, assuming he's healthy. But I mean,
at least a little bit.
At least a little bit. First quarter, maybe even first half. We don't know yet. Maybe try and get him ramped up back up into basketball shape. But as far as Luka goes, I would say I'm more so concerned about him and just health going forward. I'm not necessarily concerned about this injury streak, like, just up front. I'm just more so worried about it going forward, because I know strains are something that's typically plagued Luka in years past, and, you know, not necessarily a calf strain, but more so hamstring injuries and stuff like that, which happens to be on that left leg, which where that calf strain was. So I would say I'm more so concerned about that perspective of it, not necessarily the injury itself. I think he'll be ready for that October 25th match. But I mean, look, it's something to keep in mind, because it is a multiple week injury, or can be a multiple week injury. It didn't sound like it was, but it definitely could be. We know that he's going to get reevaluated. Nothing's come up so far. I don't know if they can get reevaluated in this 3-day stretch. I'm honestly not sure about that. So it might have to be till Saturday or Friday, whenever they get back in the building. But for whenever they do get reevaluated, it will be important information for us, of course, and for the team for that matter. So we'll see where exactly they stand as far as that goes. But I can guarantee you this, Luka's probably out for that last preseason matchup. And then, you know, just considering that Kyrie's is labeled as soreness, as you said, I would expect him to play. But again, you know, we don't know yet, because again, we haven't seen the full report of any of those injuries, but we shall see them in a few days. So I don't really know, you know, what all we can comment on, but I would definitely say I'm more so worried about the Luka injury, just because, again, like I said, you know, it's not necessarily the injury itself. I just think going in the future, strains and things of that matter are something that typically take time to heal. And, you know, he's going to have to work into, you know, mid-season shape as soon as the season starts. And if that calf is not under, if that calf is not in wraps, or not, maybe not in wraps, but if that calf is not 100% healthy, it could limit production, at least to start the season, which we, you know, we all know that the Mavericks get off to historically low starts to start the season. So I think it's going to be important for them to get off out of the gates running, and we'll see. But yeah, I would say I'm not necessarily too concerned about any of those injuries.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a huge blessing, and probably something that I think we're underselling, that the Mavericks have 10 days in between games, from the Real Madrid game to the Pistons game. That's a lot of rest and recovery, especially for injuries that seem pretty minor in both of Luka and Kyrie's case. I'm actually going to provide the counter argument. I do think, though, that I'm more concerned about Kyrie's injury, because Mark Stein did say on the broadcast when he was on there with Folliwell and Derek Harper that Kyrie's injury, apparently the soreness had only increased. I mean, obviously it is just soreness at the end of the day. Or I don't know if he said, I don't know the exact term he used, whether he said increased or hadn't gotten any better, something like that. I think he used some sort of phrase of that nature. And that's obviously definitely not an encouraging sign, especially considering the amount of games Kyrie's missed over the last couple seasons. And, you know, especially given his age as well. I think for those two factors, that obviously I just think it's a little bit more volatile of a situation in terms of what direction it could go. I mean, that's and obviously that's just me speaking off of where Kyrie has been historically the last couple seasons. So I hope it's not something that's severe. I don't think it is. But both of those situations, we're obviously going to have to monitor accordingly, because, you know, they could end up obviously definitely halting the Mavericks' start to the season pretty drastically compared to where they want to be. And, you know, we're only going to find out in the coming days as those guys get reevaluated back in Dallas. And, you know, we'll have more updates for you in terms of that. You know, right now, I do think, you know, as Jaren kind of alluded to, you know, we are just going to sort of hold down the smoke a little bit on that front, because both of the injuries don't seem serious. And, you know, I think honestly, both of those guys, you know, there's a decent chance that they'll both be ready to be in that last dress rehearsal versus Detroit. But even if they're, you know, wanting to keep both of them out for precautionary reasons, you know, that's completely, you know, cool with me. I'm not going to be freaking out if I, you know, it's, I see on the injury report that they're out versus Detroit or anything like that, but that'll, you know, definitely, I think, increase the mystery around the whole situation, unless they kind of come out and be, you know, the team just says, hey, we're resting Kyrie and Luka, or, you know, obviously not using the vernacular of resting, you know, whenever, however, you know, load management friendly terms you can put that. But, you know, the whenever the team, if they come out and kind of stage it that way, and, you know, we at least know the injuries aren't serious, I'm definitely not going to be pressed if they don't play in that game. But, you know, if they just pop up on the injury report and we don't hear anything, you know, till the start of the season, that's definitely going to cause you know, a lot more panic on my end. So we'll just have to stay updated with that. But luckily, I don't think it's anything that's too serious as of right now. In terms of other Mavericks that are injured at the moment, I think that everybody is fully healthy except for Mike Miles Jr., who has yet to play in a preseason game. He was listed out with illness in the first one. And is that still been the thing that's kept him up the last two games? I haven't checked the full injury report.
I believe it was the second game. I'm not quite sure the first game, but yeah, he has not played a single preseason game. I assume if it is illness for all three of those games, I assume he'll be back and ready for that last Detroit matchup.
Yeah, I mean, unless he caught something just terrible.
But yeah, I mean, that'd be the absolute worst of the worst. But
yeah, luckily he is, you know, for his sake, I'm happy that he is locked up on a two-way contract, because if one of those Exhibit 10 guys, you know, that's just pining for their NBA lives, got, you know, an illness like that and just wasn't able to play any preseason games, I'd feel like terrible, because that would be like, that could just end your career right there, just because you get sinus infection preseason. But no, I mean, it must be pretty serious if it's kept him out three games. So well wishes to him. I wrote an article about him over the summer, so I hope he does good and everything. But we'll have to, you know, monitor that. I think he'll be spending a lot more time in Frisco, I'd assume, than with the main roster, just due to the amount of guards that the Mavericks have this season. But, you know, you never know. He is on the two-way contract, so we'll definitely see. But moving on to the actual games, Jaren, you know, we're going to go ahead and start with the Real Madrid game here. Probably the worst or loss of the two, I would say pretty definitively. You know, this one obviously played out fairly interesting. We're not going to dive into the, you know, how the game actually went itself too heavily, you know, as we have been with most of these preseason games, you know, kind of just talking about trends that we can start to, you know, diagnose as something that could actually, you know, come into fruition come the regular season. You know, or is this something that, you know, we're overreacting to? You know, that's kind of the basis of which we're going to be analyzing these games under. But, you know, starting with that Real Madrid game, obviously Real Madrid had an excellent shooting game, essentially all game. They came out, I think, like 8 of 9 from three to start the game. Definitely rattled the Mavericks a little bit. Obviously, Luka, you know, had injured that, you know, calf, I believe, in practice in Abu Dhabi or the day before in Madrid. I can't remember exactly, but, you know, he at least got to play a token, you know, like 5 minutes to start the first quarter, you know, just to attribute sort of his time in Real Madrid. And that was obviously a big reason for the Mavericks having that game in the first place. So definitely sucked he couldn't play a little bit more, but they had a nice tribute for him after the first quarter. So you know, he was obviously the Mavericks tour guide in Madrid and, you know, has assumed a sort of leadership role with the team. He's taking them out to dinners in Abu Dhabi and stuff like that. So, you know, that aspect of everything, you know, I do at least think is really cool. But the game itself obviously didn't go really according to plan for Dallas. Now, you know, like we said, it is an exhibition game. It's not the first time something like this has happened where an international team has beat an NBA team in preseason. As a matter of fact, Luka was on the Real Madrid team back in 2016 when he was only like 16 or 17 years old beat, you know, Russell Westbrook and KD when they were at the Thunder. So that's an interesting sort of wrinkle. So, you know, Real Madrid is like 3-6 all time in NBA preseason games that they put up there during the broadcast. But it's obviously, you know, not ideal to lose in that sort of fashion, even if it is preseason. And I think it also is sort of a situation that sort of got expedited as well by the Mavericks, you know, also losing their first, you know, two preseason games. That definitely didn't help anything. So, Jaren, the Mavericks, you know, defense, you know, specifically has definitely, you know, not looked the best in the last two preseason games, but even more so in that Real Madrid game. You know, any sort of takeaways right off the bat that you have from that game?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's alarming whenever you allow a European team to score 127 points on you, first off. And I mean, second off, you know, the game, it was just, you know, I don't want to overreact from a preseason game, but that was definitely one of the more overreaction type preseason games, because again, it was against a EuroLeague team. And I get that Real Madrid is like the 1992 Chicago Bulls of the, or not 1992, but they're the 90s Chicago Bulls of EuroLeague. They pretty much win everything over there, or have won everything historically over there. But, you know, even still, I don't think that there should be any competition with an NBA team. And I'm not trying to, you know, explain this loss or anything. But at the time that it was happening, I will say it was a little frustrating. But yeah, I mean, as far as defense goes, I think that this was probably the most frustrating part of the game, because it seems like at times there was little to no rim protection in the game. And that was including Derek Lively, including, you know, our boy Dwight Powell, who we'll get into a little bit more later on. But, you know, that was including all these guys that were supposed to improve the defensive or the defensive aspect for the Mavericks. And we just simply didn't see that, really. I think if anything, this is probably a good wake up call for the Mavericks. You know, you can build a lot of film from this. You can learn a lot from this. And, you know, of course, hopefully translate this into practice. I hope, you know, Jason Kidd gets, you know, whatever sort of action he needs to get from this. I hope that he gets it down, because, like, you know, we only have one more preseason game. I get that we still have, I mean, I guess a little, or just now under 2 weeks until the season really begins. So there still is time. You know, we shouldn't be in panic mode or anything like that. But as far as defensively the game goes, it was a little alarming, I will admit. The Mavericks, I believe, even got out-rebounded in every aspect, offensive and defensive rebounding. There really was no rebounding from anybody this game. I'm kind of looking down the board. I guess Grant Williams, honestly, he led all Mavericks with 9 rebounds, which honestly is a good sign, because he looked pretty multifaceted in this game. Of course, he only played like the first half, but I was honestly fairly impressed with how he played. But yeah, as far as, you know, defensive or as far as defense and rebounding goes, it was just a very alarming sort of game. And I know this Mavericks team isn't really built for rebounding or any means like that, but to allow, you know, European,
it's something team, that they put a very big emphasis on in the preseason.
They did. They put a very big emphasis on this season, and they put, of course, they try to improve the defense by any means necessary. They, you know, they got the right names to do so. It's not if they can put it on the court. So, yeah, I mean, I would say for the, I'm putting this in air quotes for any of y'all listening, but for any of the improved defensive and rebounding stats, we just simply didn't see that. And let's see if I can get this guy's right. But the Poirier center for Madrid had 6 blocks. I don't know his first name. Had 6 blocks.
Just say his whole stat line for everybody.
Yeah, let's see this. All right. Well, he didn't score. He didn't score any. Or actually, I lied. He had 19 points.
Yeah.
I was looking at the wrong guy. 19 points, 6 blocks, 2 assists, and 10 rebounds. So,
oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. 4 of which were offensive rebounds. So, I mean, he dominated the Mavericks. He looked like he deserved a roster spot in NBA, in any NBA team. But, I mean, he was a former Boston Celtic, if I remember right.
Yes.
He was, yeah. So there's a lot of former Celtics, and I think that's a common trend for Madrid. But, it is definitely a little alarming, the fact that he, and even the guy that was playing over him, I forget his name, was it Yabusele?
He's like their.
Or no, it was Tavares.
Eddie Tavares, yeah.
Yeah, Eddie Tavares. He was even playing pretty solid too. Yeah, I mean they
he was a lot. He was a lot more clunky, but his size alone was just too much for Dallas, I feel like, at times.
They were pretty much just having their way with any Maverick that was on the floor. I mean, Derek Lively had a decent first half, but after that, pretty much fell off a cliff. And I mean, Dwight Powell put up a career high 13 points. But I mean, outside of that, like, there really was no positives in this game. So I don't know. It was definitely alarming from that sense. Again, you know, we're not trying to overreact, because it was an exhibition game. But if you're trying to build momentum headed into the season, that is one way to not do that. So What are your thoughts on?
And I mean, obviously, I think the rim protection has been the most sort of magnified, you know, lackluster aspect of this defense thus far through three preseason games. But I will say that, you know, they obviously are trying to switch a lot more this year. And you can see between the guards, you know, I think both the guards and the wings are doing a pretty decent job across the roster in terms of defending, you know, individually in one-on-one matchups. I haven't seen as much, you know, single dribble blow-bys as we were seeing last year so far. So I have enjoyed that. But you can definitely see that everybody on the defense, including the guards and the wings, are, you know, still confused on rotations and switches, and they haven't fully grasped the Mavericks system yet. You can definitely see that's noticeable because there's a lot of actions that both Madrid and Minnesota ran in both of the last two games. Like, you know, just simple stuff like flare outs and, you know, for, you know, off a screen to get a 3-point shooter open, and it's just wide open. So there's a lot of stuff to patch up between that, because, you know, while Real Madrid did shoot really good, they also had a ton of open looks in this game.
No, absolutely. You know, they did have a lot of open looks, which led to their 8 of 9 start to start the game. And honestly, you know, pretty much from there, I knew that, you know, it was going to be lights out. But
like, I feel like the Mavericks are not doing a good job at collectively closing out.
No, right that yeah. For all three games, and especially back-to-back games against Minnesota, you figured, you know, it is an exhibition game at the end of the day, but you figure, you know, you're going to make some adjustments heading into that game. You know what they're going to do. They know what you're going to do. But there seemingly was no adjustment. And again, you know, whether it was Minnesota, whether it was Madrid or Real Madrid, I should say, because there's a difference. You know, they were kind of just shooting lights out, you know, shooting whatever shot they wanted. A lot of that sort of dribble penetration led to open wing shots. And we've seen that time and time again plague the Mavericks throughout this preseason matchup. So I think if there's one thing that the Mavericks need to work on, you know, I don't really know how to refer to it, but kind of spacing, attacking off of closeouts, you know, just at least getting a hand in somebody's face, because there's been plenty of times where, you know, shooters are just wide open with, yeah, you know, nobody even within 4 feet of them.
I think, so, yeah, no, I would,
I don't know. It's pretty embarrassing at times. I can't lie, but yeah, I mean, the Mavericks have a lot to work on in terms of defense, but I do like what you said where, you know, there isn't as many, you know, one dribble blowbys as there was last season, because I think Grant Williams and all the other guys that we added for that matter have really, you know, added that. Dante Exum looked fairly, really good, honestly.
Yes, I mean, got to point out, I think Derek Jones Jr. has looked really good.
Yeah, he has. He's looked pretty impressive, but yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's kind of the, whenever the play, or I'm trying to think of like the way to say it, but whenever it's kind of the end of shot clock scenarios is whenever the Mavericks are kind of losing sight on that sort of either that open shooter or, you know, just sort of that action running by, like there's just not really much scramble defense there to be played for the Mavericks. So I think that's something that definitely needs to be improved upon. But, you know, like I said earlier, I think one thing to take away from this is at least a good film session. Some good changes in that sort of, you know, practice day or practice, however they do their practice runs. But there does need to be change. Again, three games and it's preseason, but, you know, you do need to change some things up before the season begins.
No, 100%. Do we want to get into, before we kind of just start, you know, diagnosing individual players and how they've played throughout these last couple preseason games, do we want to get into how the game ended with Facu Campazzo, you know, one of the greatest Mavericks of all time, of course, from last season.
Eight games, all time.
Torching us there at the end, going for seven straight points, two left-handed layups in a row on Jelly Walker. Was able to get to that shot very easily. There was no sort of help side rim protection, but it was also pretty bad defense at the point of attack, and then he pulls up and shoots a three from like literally like 33 feet on the right wing. And it's just nothing but net. I believe Facu shot, I don't even know if he shot 25% from three in his time with Dallas last year. It didn't feel like he did. So, I mean, props to him, man. He's been in Real Madrid for a long time before he made that switch to come over to the NBA. And it seems like, you know, maybe for whatever reason, you know, some of those European guys, like they just adapt to the play style over there a little bit better, or, you know, for whatever reason, they're more confident over there. Maybe it's just not as much, you know, the maybe the lights aren't as bright. I don't really know, but you know, NBA or not, he looked tenfold better than when he was in Dallas for sure. Like, I mean, he was actually, you know, despite his size, like he was playing like JJ Barea out there. And I mean, from a shooting perspective too, I mean, he just, I don't know what exactly changed. I mean, I haven't really been watching him, but he's always had like great numbers since he's been at Real Madrid. And he has a sort of contingent of Argentina and Real Madrid fans that, you know, stand the absolute shit out of him on Twitter. So, I mean, he's got it going from that perspective. So, I mean, it just could be his niche is, you know, playing EuroLeague basketball. He can't do it in the NBA. I don't know. What are you, any thoughts on Bazo? Because it was right before Jaren and I had to go to work, and definitely set the tone for our shift. I'll say as much as that, because I was pretty pissed off at, because Jaren didn't want to be late to work. Because for context, our job started at 4. Jaren and I worked at the same place, and Jaren didn't want to be late. So I ended up, you know, taking that burden, and I finished the last couple minutes of the game, and you know, just got to Papado's.
Was it your best watch? Was it the best few minutes?
Best few minutes of basketball I'd seen for sure. There were, you know, that end of the game stretch there, really the whole fourth quarter for the Mavericks was definitely a lot less encouraging in terms of what we got to see in garbage time compared to, you know, Minnesota. Obviously, I guess I wouldn't necessarily label it garbage time since it did end up becoming a close game in, you know, the instance of Real Madrid. But it was just funny that the Mavericks had, you know, somewhat decisively actually kind of, you know, taken the game away in that third quarter to an extent. You know, started to I think they started to patch up a little bit of the open looks that Real Madrid was getting. There still definitely was just as much pressure on the rim as there was from a, you know, from the big man perspective. I mean, that guy, that Poirier guy, he had two backdoor cut alley-oops, both on Derek Lively in the second half. So, or maybe one was in the first half, but I mean, it was just like, from the center position, I mean, one of the more abysmal holistic performances from the center spot. I mean, from Rashawn Holmes in his few minutes that he got, Derek Lively, Dwight Powell, the rim protection was not there in this game. But obviously, you know, Dallas, I thought, you know, really did tighten up their perimeter defense in that second half. And, you know, amidst obvious, you know, they very well could have, you know, won the game had they kept in, you know, even some of their rotation guys in there. But that group at the end there wasn't able to, you know, bring the tide home after, you know, Real Madrid was playing their whole, you know, crew of starters and, you know, really trying to, you know, pine to win that game. But so, you know, props to them for making some of those three down the stretch. They did get red hot right when they needed to win that game and sort of, you know, snuck the game away. It definitely felt like we were in control, but I mean, it still is very demoralizing to kind of lose in the fashion that they did down the stretch with Campazzo of all people just going absolute off. So I did want to just touch on that because of the sort of irony in that situation. But moving on into individual players, I guess we'll sort of categorize this, you know, in terms of who is impressed and who hasn't, and then everybody else we can kind of say is neutral. And Jaren, I figured, you know, we might as well just do this for the whole preseason so far, and we can kind of just go down the roster and talk about everybody, because, you know, we did cover that first game, but we did kind of focus a little bit more on the game and stuff. We hadn't seen a basketball game, and that pod was a little bit all over the place. You know, it was our first pod back after our sabbatical. So, you know, in terms of, you know, like we talked about, we can't really, you know, take too much away from these games as they are, because they are exhibition matches. But starting off with some of the guys that have caught your eye this preseason, that have, you know, played above expectations, who do you want to start off with?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll list off the guys that I've been fairly surprised with, and then we can talk about them, of course, individually. But I think Dante Exum, for obvious reasons, I've liked the way that he's played. We'll go with Grant Williams. I think he's played fairly well. You know, nothing too major, nothing.
We have the neutral category as well.
So. Yeah, I was about to say, I did forget that you said neutral. So we'll keep him in the neutral. Going down the line here, I'm looking at the Real Madrid box.
We can talk about them a little bit as we go. So, I mean, starting off with Exum, you want to elaborate a little bit upon, you know, what you've seen from him in preseason so far? Because, I mean, I've talked about this on Twitter. He's been playing a lot of almost like backup point guard minutes for the Mavericks, sort of running that second unit. And he's done a really great job of controlling the pace of play, pushing the ball in transition. He's really good at applying pressure on the rim just because of how explosive he is in his frame, you know, and how he has a very tight handle for, you know, as tall as he is and everything like that. So he's done a great job of like drawing two defenders and being able to make some of those dump off passes, and, you know, find some guys out on the perimeter. He's very savvy. I've noticed that, you know, once he does, you know, drive by a guy, he's not necessarily like looking to score every time. He showed me a lot more from a playmaking perspective, than I think I would have thought for sure. That's definitely my first thing. The defense has looked amazing. He's made a couple threes so far. I think he made one in the game versus Madrid and made one
or two. He went two for three.
Yeah. From three?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, how about that? Yeah. And then he made a couple in that Timberwolves game as well. And I mean, he's just been, he looks like a sort of ball stopper on defense that can come in, you know, maybe run the second unit to a sort of extent. I mean, he's looked good on offense. Like, he's taking advantage of space and opportunities. He's just looked like a much more complete player since I've seen him in the NBA a couple years ago.
Yeah, I mean, Will, like, I'm gonna flat out say it. I think that he's kind of the diamond in the rough that this team's been looking for. I think, you know, for a win, Kyrie Irving does miss those 10 to 15 games that he seems to miss every season, maybe more. I mean, this guy's a great replacement. You know, I don't know if it's necessarily going to be him in the starting lineup.
Either him or Josh, that, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's either going to be him or Josh, of course. But I've really liked what I saw from Exum these past three games, really. More so in this Madrid game. I don't know if it was because they were playing an international team. If, you know, he has played overseas the last two seasons, obviously.
No, we're playing NBA rules,
I saw
Rudy, if you guys didn't catch this, Rudy Fernandez got like, he was like really weirded out when they called a transition take foul. And he was just talking to the ref for like 3 minutes. Like, well, what did I do?
I don't know if it was because he was playing an international team or what, but I mean, just his ability to really dissect the defense fairly quickly, you know, get down in the lane or make just the correct pass against Madrid was really surprising to me. I didn't think he was going to be at this level of playmaking, you know, with his time back in the NBA. I didn't really think that he's going to be at that level.
I mean, he had never shown it, to your credit.
He had never shown it. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. His big thing was like, you know, he was obviously a really good defender, and, you know, he was really good at using his athleticism to get to the rim when he did play in the NBA. But, you know, making some of those tougher finishes had always been a challenge for him. But I mean, I think his finishing and his playmaking has looked pretty good so far.
And shooting has been, you know, fairly, like, he's been super efficient.
And look, I mean, I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that, and I'm part of the reason that I don't know if the Mavericks would want to make him, you know, that third starter is because, look, he isn't, you know, despite his 6'6 frame and his ability to guard wings, you know, he is a little quick, you know, more quick-footed. You may probably prefer him at the point of attack and on the offensive side of the ball. I don't think he's not a strict 3-and-D wing. Like, he may end up shooting, you know, at an improved rate this year. I don't necessarily know how good that's going to be, but also his volume of threes is not going to be crazy. Like, regardless how much he improved, like, he's not a standstill spot-up shooter. So that may be, you know, I do think he will play a lot with Kyrie and Luka. I don't necessarily know if he is going to start with them just because of that aspect. I think they probably would want more of a, you know, maybe 3-and-D type-ish player out there. And the difference between him and Josh in that category is marginal. I would just say that Josh does more – when Josh does decide to, you know, play make, you know, take guys off the dribble, stuff like that, I feel like it's in scenarios where he's working off the catch versus, him bringing the ball up and like running the offense, if that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense.
It's interesting because, you know, it is funny though. They just like Exum and Josh Green, you know, obviously both from Australia, played in the national, the World Cup together. They played for the national team in the Olympics and everything. And obviously a little bit of an age difference, but They do have, you know, obviously defensively almost like identical games, but offensively, even there, you know, there are a lot of similarities but between the two. But I do think that there are some, you know, minute differences, and those might be why the Mavericks are preferential to starting Josh Green. But carry on, of course.
Yeah, you know, when writing about these two in the offseason, because, you know, usually whenever I was writing about Dante Exum, Josh Green is pretty much mentioned a lot, because I was referring to that sort of ball stopper that both those guys are. But, you know, to your point, I think Dante Exum is more, you know, a playmaker with the ball in his hands. You know, whenever he's dribbling up the court, he can create plays. He can set the floor, do all those things, to your point. And then, you know, for Josh Green's credit, yeah, like you said, he creates more off the dribble. Creates more off the pass, kind of creates more on the fly, really. And I think both those type sort of players on offense are very important, of course, for obvious reasons. But yeah, I mean, you know, Exum sets the floor. Josh Green kind of controls the chaos and really gets those sort of, you know, off the dribble sort of playmaking appeals, which I or passes, which I think is honestly like fairly nice. But, you know, I don't think that you can play both these guys together because, again, they do fairly do the same thing on defense. I mean,
I think you definitely play them together because, I mean, I think either of them can defend wings. I know that the, you know, Jason Kidd, I think it, even in one of his interviews, had talked about both of them playing together. But, you know, in Green's case specifically, you know, I do want to credit his spot up shooting. I do think he is definitely a better spot up shooter than Dante Exum, obviously. I mean, we'll have to, you know, see how the season goes to say that definitively. But, in terms of Josh Green's shot, even in preseason, like I don't necessarily know how he did it, but I mean his mechanics even look improved from last year. Like how fast his and you know how fluid his shooting motion is has been something that I have been you know really fascinated by. You know he hasn't took a whole lot of threes in preseason, but like all of them have been on target or going in. Like he had a 4-point play against Minnesota. Even his misses are the process looks like really good. He's either, you know, it's either in and out or back iron. Like, I don't know. I think Josh Green's shooting real, you know, potentially take an exponential jump this season.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And look, I think one thing that kind of plagued him was his inconsistency throughout the last really two seasons. If you just look at his jump shot, I mean, it's so mechanical now. It doesn't miss a beat. And what I mean by that is he's not, you know, there's not anything changing about his jump shot throughout the game. It's all the same, whether it's the first quarter or the third quarter. We haven't really seen him play fourth quarter minutes because it's preseason.
And like he doesn't, I feel like he always had like a weird sort of, with his, kind of his guide hand, his offhand, I feel like he kind of had like a little weird hitch with it. Especially like his rookie season where he kind of like do like this type thing where
it's like, definitely mellowed out.
Yeah. Even coming base, up from his left side and like, you know,
Even if you look at his base, I think base is one of the more underrated parts about a jump shot.
Yeah,
if you look
at
his base, there is absolutely nothing, you know, that's different throughout the game about his base.
His hips are completely square to the basket every time.
Yes, all square to the basket. And I think he looks amazing. That was going to be my other guy in that list. I mean, if we want to move on just really quickly, we can go Dexter Dennis. I feel like I'll let you talk about him more because I know that you wrote an article on him. But I mean, he's really impressed me. I know he had a little bit more of a, you know, a little bit more of a coming back to life game against Madrid. But in those first two games against Minnesota, he looked really good. And he honestly did look good against Madrid defensively. He played fairly aggressive, but much more of a come to life game. In terms of that, just, you know, wasn't really scoring that much. But, I mean, heck, dude, like, he reminds me of, I'm trying to think of a, kind of a younger Josh Green, or maybe not younger Josh Green, but he's out to jump out of the gym. He will dunk on anybody, it looks like. He's not afraid of anybody, and I really like that about him. I mean, he's young in terms of, you know, I guess just NBA veteranship. Like, he's young in that sense. So he'll learn how to, you know, balance all of that if he is to stay in the NBA. But I really like him so far. You know, I'll let you get more into him, but I like him so far for that last two-way spot.
Yeah, no, definitely early candidate to get that last two-way spot. I would agree with that. Obviously played with the Magic this last summer league and definitely a bit of an unknown commodity coming into Mavericks training camp compared to maybe some of these other guys. But, you know, he won AAC Defensive Player of the Year when he was at Wichita State. He has an almost 7 foot wingspan. He's like 6'5", like 215 pounds. I mean, you look at the guy, he's like really built. Like he has a definite NBA ready body. It shows up from a defensive perspective. He's honestly been like one of the more impressive defenders on the team, you know, in the minutes that I've got to see him play one-on-one individual defense. Now, granted, he's definitely not playing maybe as much as some of the other rotation guys at this preseason period, as, you know, he's usually only getting in the fourth quarter because that's when they're playing most of these exhibit 10 and two-way guys. But I mean, yeah, he's, you know, he shot the ball really well. He has really good shooting form. Those, you know, the percentages on his threes, you know, weren't necessarily, I guess, reflected, you know, or reflective of his form, in college. He shot pretty average from distance, kind of in the lower to mid 30s throughout his time at Wichita State and Texas A&M. But you know, he's a fifth year senior, you know, just got undrafted, got picked up by the Mavericks after the Magic Summer League. And, he looks like he could be a physical, tenacious athlete on defense. I haven't seen anything that would rub me the wrong way from that perspective. I just think if it's, you know, if he can be a threat from outside, that could definitely maybe open up some of his finishing abilities, because I mean, he's an explosive athlete, like I talked about, and it's not untamed. He knows how to finish at the rim. He had a couple tough finishes throughout those first two preseason games in Abu Dhabi. And also had like a real, oh damn, bad voice, Greg. He had a really monstrous one-hand throwdown. So, I mean, yeah, I think this is a dude that, I mean, heck, could even be in the rotation if this continues. But we got to just get a lot more volume. We got to see a lot more. You know, I'd be intrigued to see if he does crack that last two-way spot with the Mavericks, and, you know, if he ever gets an opportunity. But, you know, it has only been three preseason games, but I've been very encouraged what I've seen from him so far. I definitely say he's the leader in the clubhouse to get that last spot.
Yeah, you know, as I said before, I would definitely agree. I think, you know, there's a few guys that are kind of teeter-tottering on that list, but we'll kind of transition this one. I'll go Tim Hardaway Jr. as my last pick. I've been really surprised. I figured he'd get off to a slow start because, you know, historically he does get off to a slow start shooting, but, I mean, shit, he's been shooting the lights out.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't play that first game, but the last two, he's been shooting really good, and, I mean, that's what you asked him to do. And I mean, he had an off ball steal the other day versus Real Madrid. I know. In that like first half, I was thinking of you, Darren, when that happened. I was like, wow, like that. And then, I mean, they just practically threw it right to him too. It was like, he just right where he needed to be. I was so happy. But yeah, no, I mean, like he hasn't looked terrible. I mean, obviously it's literally two preseason games, so you can't be too judgmental, but I mean, he's looked fine defensively, I think, two games. So he's been playing really good, and he's been shooting the lights out. You know, in terms of his shot diet, it honestly hasn't really been too.
It's Tim Hardaway.
You know,
it's
Tim Hardaway. It's been Tim Hardaway's shot diet, but also it hasn't been like 2021 Tim Hardaway Jr., where he was just, you know, jacking anything up that he's seeing. He's at least, you know, coming off of, you know, screens and, you know, firing it off at the top of the key, but, you know, they're not heavily contested every time. So he's at least taking open looks, even if they're, you know, he's the trailer in transition, and he's just jacking it up from like 3 feet behind, and, you know, they've been going in, so I can't complain. His shot process has looked really good. He's definitely looked, I think, a little bit faster too, you know, whole off season healthy, not having to deal. How am I forgetting? Oh, that left, or like his left pinky toe fracture or whatever it was that kept him all out of all of the remainder of the 2021-22 season. You know, he didn't have to have an off season of rehabbing. So that obviously, you know, is always good. He said, you know, in media day that he feels like he got a little bit more explosiveness back, and, you know, it's been reflected. So no, I mean, he's looked pretty good so far. I've been happy with what I've seen from him. But other than that, I guess we can kind of move on to the neutrals here. Who do you have, Jaren?
Neutrals, I guess, you know, we start out the podcast or start out with that segment saying Grant Williams. We'll move him into the neutral spot. You know, nothing too out of the ordinary. I would say just a very, you know, had Grant Williams gotten more time last season, this is probably what we would have seen, except in a starting lineup. But look, I mean, I liked what I've seen out of him. Like we said, just nothing, you know, too special. Nothing that's going to, you know, eye pop.
He's defended extremely well.
Yeah. And he's defended extremely well. And to your point, you know, he's honestly been more of a shot blocking presence than,
I mean, I think the first
outside of Derek Lively.
Yeah, no, the first two games, the only thing I think I'm, you know, somewhat a little bit concerned about with Grant is his shot diet, you know, just not expanding whatsoever beyond spot up threes. Cause those first two games, I think he like went like 2 of 7 from three in both of the games, or like 2 of 8, maybe, but like all of them were three pointers. I don't know if he took like any other shots. And this last game, he got like a little putback, seemed a little bit more involved within the general flow of the offense. Just seemed like he was a ball mover a little bit more. But I mean, barring that, you know, I hope that the threes obviously fall at a better clip. They seem to have in the Real Madrid game. So just that. And, you know, every once in a while, you know, if he can get involved on the offensive glass, and, you know, I'd like to see him definitely get involved as a cutter more. But, you know, we just haven't seen enough basketball for me to, you know, talk too extensively on that.
Yeah, and I can't remember if I mentioned this in the most previous podcast, but I mean, Grant Williams has done a really good job of kind of just probing around, you know, behind the arc. He's been really the only guy that hasn't really just stood in a corner. He's also he's been really, you know, moving, or he's been really active in terms of off-ball movement, which I really like to see. I don't think the Mavericks really have a guy like that at that forward position. But another sort of mid-tier kind of guy, or you know, just kind of neutral kind of guy, Derek Jones Jr. I feel like he's not necessarily improved, but I feel like he has looked really good in terms of basketball play. But again, you know, just nothing that
he didn't play that first game
out of the ordinary. What'd you say?
He didn't play that first game either.
Yeah, he didn't. Yeah, that is very true. He didn't play that first game, but you know, he hasn't played bad at all. I wouldn't say that by any means. He had a really good game against Madrid. Had 5 rebounds. Had that. Was it a putback dunk or?
Acrobatic putback layup, and then
layup. Yeah,
he's looked really good, and his basketball IQ is really good. You could kind of hear him in those post game media press conferences. Like he definitely, you know, he's very soft spoken, but you can tell the guy has like a lot of respect and love for the game of basketball. Like he's a true hooper, which surprisingly, even in the NBA, some of the guys, you know, everybody's a true hooper, but some are definitely more so than others for sure. And, you know, I've liked that much about him so far. And, you know, he's looked really good out there. I like how he finds a way to get himself involved in everything. He's a very active cutter, very good off-ball mover. You know, I'd like to see the three fall at a little bit better clip, but, you know, in terms of everything else and his defense, you know, particularly in one-on-one scenarios, I've been impressed by, you know, his athleticism. You can see how it benefits the Mavericks at times. They just don't have a guy who has that sort of leaping ability. It leads to the Mavericks, you know, being able to get a little bit more of those 50-50 balls and stuff. So I've really liked from what I've seen from him in the games, you know, especially if a lot of how, you know, expansive of a role he's going to have in Dallas this year is going to be conducive to how well that 3-point shot falls. So that's what we're going to be looking at the most with him, obviously, going forward, but definitely have not, you know, nothing bad from him so far.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I would agree with everything you said. I mean, he's honestly been very active on the glass, which is something that's kind of surprised me. I think that he's kind of been that way throughout his whole career. It's just not something that goes, you know, too much into, you know, at least a, you know, whenever you're watching him, you don't really notice that standpoint.
Yep.
But yeah, I've been fairly surprised with how he's played. I feel like he's kind of not necessarily locked himself as a rotational guy, but I feel like he can very well become a rotational guy. Especially if
I think right now he's definitely a rotational guy.
I would say he's on the line of that. I would say he's probably, in terms of everybody off the bench right now, I would say he's one of the more guys that, or one of the better guys in terms of rotational minutes. Like I think he has higher odds.
I think he's the first wing off the bench. I think he's playing above Omax right now, in my opinion.
He's definitely playing above Omax. I will definitely say that. But yeah, I mean, I think he's done a lot more things. Just kind of around the margins than I was kind of anticipating, really. But yeah, I mean, I think, as you said, the big thing about him is going to be how, you know, what can he shoot that 3-point ball with, or what rate can he shoot it with? So I think that's going to be, you know, very clear moving forward, is something, you know, that's got to be important. If he really does want real rotational minutes, or even a possibility at, you know, potentially starting if someone falls out of the rotation or something like that. But you know, I really am impressed with what I've seen so far out of Derek Jones Jr. Do you have anyone else? I got two more people in mind. Is there any wild cards that you think you can pull out that would be in the
neutral? No, I don't know about any wild cards. I mean, if we're talking about the Exhibit 10 guys, I think AJ Lawson I'd probably put in the neutral category.
Yeah,
he hasn't done anything to, you know, wow us, especially, you know, as I referenced with all the Exhibit 10 guys, you know, they haven't, none of them have got enough minutes to particularly do that. I mean, honestly, like I'd be honestly remiss to not include maybe all of them in there. From that perspective, I just don't know if we can take too much away from what we've seen or spin anything too negatively. The reason that, you know, obviously I think Dexter Dennis warranted a positive, you know, or the exceeded expectations, was because, you know, he wasn't with the Mavericks organization whatsoever before this training camp, and I just had no clue about him, and he's done some impressive things so far. But, you know, other than that, you know, Joe Wieskamp, he just really hasn't got too much run in it, but he's looked like a decent 3-and-D wing when he's been in there. But you know, he really only got to take like one shot in that first game. You know, Jelly Walker, he's had his ups and downs. You can definitely see how he can, you know, fill the stat sheet, you know, scoring, just being able to create space for himself at the point of attack. But, you know, there have definitely been some times where he's got tunnel vision, you know, as an isolation scorer, and that's definitely caused some negative effects because of that. Also, you know, he has not looked the best, particularly in maybe in the last couple games defensively. You know, to revert back to AJ, I think he's been really good on defense, made some threes, got out in transition for a few dunks and things of that nature. But like I said, he hasn't got a whole lot of time, hasn't, you know, got red hot shooting from outside. You know, he hasn't done anything out of the ordinary from what we're accustomed to. So I'd probably put him there. And then, you know, Greg Brown III, he had a pretty sort of rough first game, looked real out of place, but he bounced back in the Abu Dhabi game, I thought. And then, I mean, he's the only guy that you can maybe spin, that he maybe deserves a negative ranking, but I don't know if he even really played in that.
He didn't play at all in the Madrid game. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was like, I don't remember seeing him at all, but yeah. He did play a lot better in that second Minnesota game.
He did.
Had a dunk, you know, looked a lot more active defensively, and he's been having to play the five in a lot of these rotations too, because there's not a lot of other, you know, out of the two-way and Exhibit 10 guys, there's like no big man. And, you know, they've just essentially been throwing all five of them out together at the end of the game sometimes. So he's obviously kind of out of position on defense, but he's been able to use his verticality a little bit, and he wasn't getting his body near as bad playing center in that second game. So I was impressed with that much, at least, because I was pretty discouraged at, you know, some of the defensive deficiencies in the first game. But, like, you know, I couldn't knock him too hard because he's playing out of position, but you know, I'd like to see his, you know, we haven't really seen his jump shot at all. I don't even know. Maybe he's took like 1-3, but, you know, that's obviously one of the bigger things about his game right now. And it does not, I mean, we will have to see more, of course, but it does not seem like it's been something that, you know, he's been able to expand upon, but we'll see. I think a lot of these guys will probably end up, you know, back in Frisco with the Mavericks. They were able to accrue a lot of their returning player rights in most of their instances. So that's good that they're, you know, not going to be lost totally, but, you know, and obviously in AJ's case, you know, he'll be on the team, but, you know, that's really all I have from those guys' perspective. You know, you can definitely rattle off whoever the last two neutral guys that you had in mind.
Yeah. I kind of want to just touch up on Greg Brown a little bit. I feel like he's kind of been dealt a pretty bad hand in terms of, you know, how, in terms of expectations. I like him as a high flyer kind of guy. I just think the sort of position that he's gonna kind of been put in as like the lone five in these garbage time minutes.
Yeah.
It's just not really his type of style. And I feel bad for him in that sense.
Me too.
But look, if he's going to be with the Legends in some way, shape or form, then at that point, you know, I'm okay with it because at least he'll get some playing time down there. But I'm going to switch it up to three players actually, because I forgot about one. I'll rattle them off real quick and we can discuss Derek Lively. Second, I feel like he's been, you know, fairly average. We'll go Seth Curry, and then the one that I forgot was Jane Hardy. I feel like Jane Hardy could have even been in that positive title, but that second half of the Minnesota game, he kind of fell off. And
honestly, the Real Madrid game was...
Yeah, he was really inefficient in the Real Madrid game, so that kind of put him in a neutral site. But overall, I think I've been, you know, fairly impressed with him.
Yeah.
But I guess real quickly, we'll just talk about Derek Lively. Probably the most, I would say, headlining player in terms of what we've talked about right now. But
I'd say he's like the most emblematic of the neutral category, yeah, because he's definitely like had the most very good, but also very bad preseason. You know, he's definitely, you know, fit the mold of, you know, having those sort of cliche rookie center mistakes. Those are obviously kind of bound to happen. It's, you know, not easy to go in there and deal with that physicality as, you know, a 19-year-old rookie. And, you know, we've seen him be out of position on defense and on the glass oftentimes, and it's definitely hurt the Mavericks pretty bad in a lot of those instances. But then he also flashes, you know, his tantalizing, rim protection and weak side shot blocking ability. And it's just a matter of being in position and, you know, actually making a play without fouling and, you know, sifting through all the different intangibles for him, you know, as well as being able to, you know, make basic finishes on offense. You know, the athleticism is obviously off the charts. But, you know, if you can't make a, you know, 1 or 2 foot, you know, turnaround baby hook shot, then, you know, it's like, how much does that matter? Right. So, you know, I like, you know, he's obviously, you know, improving by the day. It's not anything that I'm mad at him specifically for in terms of his deficiencies. It's all stuff that's very easy for him to improve on throughout the course of his career. And I mean, he's been working diligently. He seems like he's poised to have the Mavericks starting center position. Mark Stein said in the broadcast that's more likely than not he's going to get that position. I mean, out of the Mavericks' three big men that have been playing minutes at the five, he definitely seems like he's been the best, you know, out of all those guys, the most well-suited to start, which, you know, maybe isn't fair as a rookie, but it's in the position that the Mavericks are in. And, you know, he definitely poses the biggest threat defensively out of all three of those guys. So, look, they may be forced in an uncomfortable position. Maybe it could accelerate his growth process. I think to an extent it definitely will, but it will not come without growing pains. I can guarantee you that much. And the growing pains may be a lot more costly than I think a lot of Mavs fans are willing to admit, because, you know, he's going to have to play in maybe a little bit more, you know, crucial minutes. You know, if he's starting, that probably means he's closing games too, unless, you know, one of Holmes or Powell is having an exceptionally good game. So there are a lot of different factors that play into this. And, you know, we can obviously, you know, I'm sure that the talk about, you know, trading for a center could arise at some point. You know, we're just going to have to see upon that. You know, it's obviously something that the Mavericks probably should have handled better and, you know, actually brought a, you know, starting level center into training camp. And that's not a knock against Derek. But he, you know, if you're comparing him to other centers across the league, he's just really not there yet in terms of being an NBA starter for most teams. I'm sure he on a couple of teams he probably would start, but that's not a discouraging thing from a player perspective for me. You know, it's more of a front office thing at the end of the day. And, you know, like I said, the highs are really high with him. The lows are really low is what I'll end off with.
Yeah. I mean, I pretty much just share the same sentiment as you. I mean, you know, he has looked really impressive. I will say with the minutes that he has been given with the starters, I think he's looked fairly impressive. But look, I mean, as you said, time and time again, like, you know, these rookie moments, they could outweigh the positives because they could be glaringly that bad. All I'm going to say is, like, get ready for the Drew Eubanks of the world to start, you know, pounding down low and getting shots easy up.
Not necessarily saying Poirier was doing a pretty good job of it.
Yeah. And I'm not saying he's a bad shot.
No, he's not bad. I'm just saying, like,
that's a strong suit. But
yeah,
it's, you know, whenever Rudy Gobert is able to get whatever he wants on D-Live, it's kind of disconcerting, concerning rather. So, I mean, look, you know, Rudy Gobert is a great basketball player. It's just, you know, he's not the best offensive talent in the world by any means. And the fact that I'm not really quite sure how much he played, I think, you know, had it been a regular season game, and we'll see this very soon, but had it been a regular season game, I think it would have been a lot different. And look, I love D-Live. I love D-Live. Yeah. I think it's probably the smart move to start him, honestly, over Dwight Powell and Rashawn Holmes. But I mean, there's going to be some – I hate saying this because it sounds so negative, but there's going to be some really bad moments.
Yeah.
In the first game, I wouldn't say we're necessarily lucky that we get to play another rookie center. Because I don't even think he'll play the five. That's Victor Wembanyama. I don't think he'll play the five.
You think they're going to run a two big lineup?
I think they'll have to start the season, unless if Popovich is just, you know, hell bent on doing it and just wants to throw him in the fire.
What have you picked? Have you seen like what they've been doing in preseason? I haven't checked if they've been
running. I actually haven't. So I could be totally wrong. I know that they already played a game, but I could be wrong. They may have just thrown it out there. But I know that Zach Lowe, and from what I've listened to ESPN and stuff like that, they've been predicting a two big lineup out of them. So
interesting.
Yeah, we'll see. But if that is the way to go, you know, the Mavericks at least draw a pretty fair assignment that first game. But from there on, you know, there's going to be a lot of good centers, and there is a lot of good centers in the West. So we'll see what happens. You know, I think the one good thing about Derek Lively is, you know, we can confidently say this, is he's gotten like immensely better throughout game by game. I will say that. And even in the summer, like, he was that way. So I think, you know, it's going to be a fast learning process for him. I'm not going to say he's going to be amazing by game 50 or any means by that, but I really do think that, you know, a game by game process is going to be needed for him to sort of grow and expand upon his game. But with that being said, you know, strength doesn't come overnight. You know, knowledge in terms of, you know, how this player is going to play or what this player is really good at, that's not going to come overnight. You know, all these sort of moves, all these sort of reads that he's going to need to make, that doesn't come overnight. That comes with time, that comes with playing. And I think it'll be good for him, you know, to get as much playing time as possible. But, you know, still the fact that the Mavericks essentially need to have a big season. This is what you were saying, essentially need to have a big season, and they're starting a rookie center. No knock on Derek Lively, because he's the one put in the situation, and he has looked the best out of the three centers that we have on this roster. But I mean, that's the answer you're left with, is it's a front office question, really. So, but I mean, with that being said,
it would be a lot different if it wasn't center, because there were definitely, and this is not me knocking the Mavericks draft selection. I'm not saying they should have done anything else, but, you know, had they selected a guy like Taylor Hendricks, you know, that guy, a guy like that, you know, if, you know, I think he's dealing with some injury concerns right now, I believe, but, you know, if he wasn't dealing with something like that, that would be like a guy that could come in and, you know, he could be a starter and probably wouldn't take much away from a rookie perspective. But yeah, playing center is a whole different ballpark in terms of adjusting to the physicality,
I would,
you know, and all that sort of stuff.
I would say center is probably the most glaring position for a rookie, especially whenever, you know, you're going to have to match up against Jokic 3 to 4 times a season. And then on top of that, you're going to have to match up against Embiid twice a year. Like all these, you know, elite level centers.
Yes, and the bigs in the NBA are like really big compared to college.
Yeah, no, yes, exactly. And I mean, he's going to struggle to say the least. But I mean, let's move on. I think that's enough negative talk, even though has played fairly well. We just, you know,
we're not going to mention the positives too much.
But we'll move on to Seth Curry. You know, nothing amazing out of him. I think that second game in Minnesota, or not in Minnesota, but against Minnesota, was honestly his best game so far. Did he play the first game? I can't remember if he.
He's played all three games.
Oh, he did. He did. Okay, yep. I couldn't remember if it was him that was out. I think it was Tim Hardaway that was out. But
yes, Tim Hardaway did not play.
It was the first game. Mm-hmm. I've been fairly, you know, I think Seth Curry's kind of played like Seth Curry. He honestly had a pretty down game against Madrid, and he went 5 for 11 shooting. I think he was 0-for-4 from 3-point line. So that's not, you know, really the best stat line. But I've been fairly surprised with, not surprised, but I've been, you know, fairly intrigued with how he's played. He's just kind of played like his regular self. I don't want him taking 11 shots a game, especially if he's going to have a bench roll. But
no, if he's hot, I'm cool with it.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. But
if he can fill it up 5-for-11,
0-for-4 from 3, like that's where I don't want 11 shots being taken from him. But, you know, like I said, or like you said, really, you know, if he is hot, you know, if the time is necessary, albeit, and he's the guy to do so. I think, you know, he's definitely one of the guys on this roster you trust with any shot that he's going to choose to take. So from that standpoint, I mean, is there really any like defensive or any more?
I've seen a couple people on Twitter say that he has looked a little slower on defense. I can't say I can reciprocate those same viewpoints. I haven't really like dialed into his defensive possessions too heavily like that. I mean, offensively, he's looked good at, you know, in terms of getting into spots. He hasn't got to the rim too much. I feel like everything has been in like that mid-range area, but you know, his game's real savvy. He has, you know, a really good pull-up. Other than that, in terms of Seth, I think that he hasn't really showcased much from a playmaking perspective through the preseason so far. I feel like everything has been like, I'm trying to score, I'm just going to pass it off. So I'd be intrigued to see if he, you know, running the Mavericks second unit, you know, if he's going to play like more at the two, because, you know, with this, you know, with Dante Exum's ascension, if he's going to get like real minutes, I'd just be, you know, intrigued between him, Seth and Hardy, that sort of, you know, conglomerate of bench guards. I'm just really intrigued to see exactly how that's going to sort out and who's going to be playing the most and, you know, who's going to be the primary playmaker and initiator, who's going to be, you know, playing more off ball as a shooter. And, you know, I think, you know, if Exum is going to be playing as good as he is, that kind of, you know, delegates either one of Hardy or Seth to get, you know, most of those minutes as that sort of off ball guy in those bench lineups. And I think that there's potential that one of those guys ends up not falling out of the rotation, but, you know, I think the Mavericks are going to definitely hand down a lot more minutes, and Jason Kidd will probably, you know, be a lot more, you know, gracious to whoever is playing, you know, or shooting better during that stretch. So that is, you know, the battle, but, you know, I wouldn't say the battle, but, you know, just seeing who kind of ends up winning in terms of getting more rotation minutes between Hardy and Seth is going to be an interesting development, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. I would definitely agree with that. And I'm going to be honest. I thought, you know, between Hardy and Seth, at least through that first two games, I thought Jaden was kind of the benefactor, or not benefactor, but I thought he was the better of the two. I thought he was going to be the sort of runner in the pack in terms of those minutes. And, you know, of course, Dante Exum, he's played really solid. I think that there's no question that he's kind of emerged out of that sort of trifecta of guards. But, you know, in terms of Hardy and Curry, it really is going to be a battle for rotational minutes for those guys. I just don't really see a world where all three of those guys can really play, you know, 15 to 20 minutes on a
game. I think all three of them can play in the same game for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah.
Yeah. Like you said, like you're saying, though, I just don't think all of them can have a huge role every night, you know, for sure.
I just don't know where you know, I really think, as you said earlier, I really think, you know, it's going to kind of depend on who's the hot hand at that time. You know, Hardy, if you're looking at it in first game standards, of course, it'd be Hardy who's getting the most minutes. But, you know, I think Seth is definitely more friendly for Kyrie and for Luka. If you want to go that route, you know, you definitely take Curry over that. But then again, Hardy down the stretch last season looked amazing with Luka. You know, he was, I think, almost like 46% on corner threes, like the last, like,
Hardy's definitely also, you know, probably he's definitely a better one-on-one defender for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe so, not off ball, but
I think it just kind of depends on the matchup or, you know, who's playing better and what moment the game is. So yeah. I think that's probably the biggest thing of it. But yeah, I mean, I was impressed with Hardy. I think he's, you know, kind of fallen down just a little bit. Nothing alarming or anything like that, but yeah. I would definitely say Hardy's one of the guys that kind of was on that surprise list and then kind of fell off from game to game. But I liked what I've seen out of Jane Hardy.
Yeah, I have been a little bit conflicted. I wouldn't say I've been as high as some other Mavs fans on how he's played so far. I do what I've really enjoyed about him is I think his handle and his ability to create space and, you know, find driving lanes. It looks, you know, as good as it's ever been. He's not really turning the ball over as much. We've seen some good passes out of him too. My main thing with him is, and I think he can turn this around. I'm just a little bit scared because, you know, with the G League Ignite, it obviously was an issue, that was, you know, put at the forefront, and that's been his shooting. And even in the games that he's filled up the box score, you know, it hasn't really been on the most efficient shooting rate, or clip. It's been a lot of, you know, he's drawn a lot of fouls and got to the free throw line, which, you know, he's a much better driver and stuff like that than Seth. So, you know, that's my only sort of drawback with how he's played so far is he's got to be a little bit more efficient shooting from outside off the dribble with the kind of volume that he takes. Because, you know, he, you know, when he's running those sort of lineups, he does, you know, he's shooting a lot of shots. So, you know, as of right now, I'd like him to be just a tad bit more efficient, but his process in terms of like getting to the rim and getting to his spots has been very good. So if he can follow through with a shot and, you know, cashing in on some of those floaters, like there were just a few times where I think the concentration's got to be there a little bit better. Like I remember a left-handed layup where he's coming straight downhill was pretty wide open. I mean, he wasn't straight at the rim, but he jumped, you know, from maybe 7-8 feet out. But I mean, he was kind of like right there, and his momentum was just going way too hard. And I mean, it was wide open. He just smoked a left-handed layup like off the backboard against Real Madrid. And it's like stuff like that, you know, that's the type of, you know, stuff that Jason Kidd may look at and be like, okay, like we can't have, you know, despite some of the insane plays that Hardy can make in comparison to Seth, you know, some of that inefficiency, you know, just can't happen, especially in year two. So that's going to be something to monitor going forward. But I have liked, you know, how he's played on offense, and I have not seen outside of, you know, a couple, you know, defensive lapses where he hasn't closed out in shooters, and he's just, you know, been way too far off his man, you know, got caught ball watching, stuff like that. He has looked pretty good in individual matchups, like I said, in defense too. So, and I think he's a better, I think it is, you know, you'd rather have him than Seth on a lot of guys one-on-one in defense, even if,
which says,
you
know, a lot, but
yes, but, yeah, but I will say Seth is probably a better team defender than him. So,
yeah, I mean, I think it's just because he's been around.
Yeah. He's been around the block more, obviously. Yeah, so,
I mean, transitioning into guys that have been pretty big disappointments. I mean, there's nobody in that starting five.
How many guys do we even have left?
You know, some of these guys I'm going to leave out, like Rashawn Holmes. I think he kind of fits.
We can talk about him, but we can just, you know, I would say he's in the disappointment category.
Okay. He's on the line for me.
Well, you also didn't get to watch the end of the game yesterday. That's the reason I'm putting him there. Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah.
But I'm going to list all of them right now, and then we can discuss individually. But Maxey, disappointment to me. We'll go Rashawn Holmes. Omax, obvious reasons. And then probably Dwight Powell probably runs that out. And then I'm not going to talk about any of the like Wieskamp or anybody like that.
Well, we talked about them. They're already in the neutral guys. And
yeah,
so. We can't even talk about Mike Miles, obviously, because, you know, he hasn't even played yet. So I guess if you want to just say he's a token negative just for having not played because of an illness games, you can. But
yeah,
he did look good in summer league. So, so, you know, with those three, well, I guess we'll start with Maxey. He's probably been the least disappointing out of those three. I think just hasn't really like shown a lot, to your credit. I mean, he's been playing the four in almost every lineup that he's in. I think he's been in a two big lineup. I don't think he's been like the lone big, maybe outside of a couple minutes. If I'm just, like,
I texted you about this, actually where he played a few minutes with Grant Williams. I don't know if that's something that's going to be, you know, moving forward.
I do remember them referencing that the Mavericks could, that was in the Madrid game. They did play five out for a second, but it wasn't, correct me if I'm wrong, but they didn't play that lineup for like more than like a couple minutes, right?
I think it was like 2 minutes. It could be something that they try to experiment with. I don't know, but I did see it for a few minutes.
No, I mean, he is the only center on the Mavericks roster. I know Rich Paul gassed up Derek Lively shooting videos, but he's not there yet. He is the only Mavericks center on the roster that could, you know, that the Mavericks have the ability to play five out with, you know, but most of, you know, to my point, Maxey has been playing a lot of four so far. And I mean, he hasn't really done anything glaringly bad on defense. But you know, he just really hasn't looked too explosive on offense. He's really just not got the ball much. Like, you know, he's got some open threes and stuff, but yeah, you know, I wouldn't say he's been a disappointment. I mean, he just has not done, you know, really anything that's caught my eye in preseason. You know, I feel like he's just kind of been getting a lot of cardio out there. And, you know, I'd like to see him at least be a little bit more aggressive in the glass too, if he's not going to play as heavy dosage of a minute, you know, of a workload either. So I wouldn't say he's definitely kind of on the fringe there, but yeah, he hasn't had the best start. Do you want to elaborate upon Dwight Powell?
On Dwight Powell. Yeah. Let's, this will probably take up the chunk of the negative guys, but I mean, Dwight, he did put up some stats in that game against Madrid, but
he was the center playing in the game, and they, you know, Real Madrid does not have the best pick and roll coverage versus.
No, they didn't have offense. The best pick and roll coverage, which led to majority of Dwight Powell's points. But I'm going to try and say this as nicely as possible, but he's looked the least like an NBA player out of any guy. And that says a lot for a guy that was the most NBA ready just last season. So, I think this kind of even trickles into his play in the FIBA World Cup. Yeah. I didn't watch any Canada games, but I do know that he was pretty heavily covered in terms of how bad he was playing. I think he even fell out of the rotation for that team. At some points, I'm not sure if he ended in the rotation or not, but I do know that at points he did fall out of it. So I don't know if this is sort of a common trend now in terms of just how he's going to play. I mean, like, it's like really disconcerting. I thought at best, especially the contract that he was going to be on, he was going to be, a really valuable backup to Derek Lively, especially with all the reports that Lively is going to likely start. I thought that he's going to be a valuable backup, and we just really haven't seen that. I mean, to anybody's credit, we haven't seen any like sort of valuable 5 minutes from Rashawn Holmes or Dwight Powell, but more so Dwight Powell. I mean, he has looked clueless on the defensive end. His pick and roll coverage, it's usually all right, to say the best.
At least it has a lot of effort in it, but he's been like out of position too.
No, he's been out of position. He's been clueless.
He's been smoked a couple layups already. Like, he smoked wide open layups in preseason so far. He's lost a lot of rebounds that I felt like he was at least kind of getting last year. So, just from a holistic perspective, has not played the best. I don't really know how else to put it. I mean, there's been a couple times he stood his ground on defense, but overall, I feel like he's getting bodied more. I mean, I wouldn't say that athleticism maybe necessarily has waned from a verticality standpoint, but maybe from
I would say from a defensive standpoint.
I feel like sliding his feet, he looks a little slower, I'd say maybe. So I don't know if that's an age thing. It's just looked a little like you said, Jaren, it has looked a little concerning from that perspective. The defense has just been abysmal. Like that's the reason he's in this category. He's been playing worse defense than he even was, last season. He's always kind of been considered a pretty neutral or sometimes even a negative defender, but oftentimes it's kind of just because of his intangibles. He's not good at flipping his hips, and getting in position, all the time. And he's not the best at keeping his hands down, without fouling, and doesn't have the best length. You've heard it, the whole 2 cents, but it's just been magnified. So hopefully that gets fixed to an extent. In the same kind of vein, Rashawn Holmes has not played a whole lot of minutes, but he has not looked the best in his minutes. He looked good the first game that he came in versus Minnesota. But he missed a few shots down the stretch in both the Timberwolves game and the Real Madrid game. And he was playing with like all the two-way guys in the Madrid game. And he just doesn't look like he has it on offense yet. I mean, he looks strong. He looks big. He's got a few really, really good rebounds. He played some good defense in, first game or so. But versus Madrid, there were a couple times that, he just failed to step up in some pretty easy, rim protection coverages, when he had like 5'10" Campazzo coming downhill like late in the game. And there were just some questionable sort of weird out of position stuff with him in the same way as Powell. And he's missed a couple layups. They weren't wide open, but his push shot and his, little baby hook, stuff like that, haven't really been coming through for him. So I'd like to see a lot more. I'd like to see him, be a lot more tenacious offensively. He's been rebounding well, but outside of that, he hasn't really added much more than Powell. And if anything, he's honestly been on the equivalent in all other areas. So that's something that's obviously been disappointing, as has the whole big man rotation. We're going to have to see how it continues to play out, but definitely off to a pretty bad start. And who was the last guy?
Omax,
yeah. And I mean, we've talked about this on the podcast as well as Twitter. Just does not look like he is as poised offensively as we initially thought. He's going to have to expand his bag in terms of a ball handling perspective to be able to get past guys. Been a couple like really intriguing plays where you see the vision is there, like some, mid-range turnaround jump shots. He is really explosive in terms of his first step getting to the rim. He's looked really unconfident in his shot so far. He's obviously playing really good defense in my opinion. That's something that you can see translates right away. He's a really aggressive defender, closes out really hard, but offensively he's just really, really raw. And I hope it turns around at least a little bit. Because I don't know if he was ever necessarily, going to be a starter, but I think that we at least penciled him to be in the rotation, especially as hard as he'd been, apparently working. And if he could at least be in the rotation, that'd be huge. But right now, he's not even a rotation ready player. But, we'll just have to see how that plays out. But, we'll catch you guys in the next podcast. We're going to definitely do a few podcasts before the Mavericks get back and play Detroit at home. We got a lot of content, you know, planned and coverage. We'll be covering the Mavericks practices. We'll fill you in the injury report. And we've got some other stuff too, in terms of predictions that we're excited about. So make sure that you follow us over at Twitter at Jaren Boslow and Will Mill J. And of course the podcast Twitter at Mainstream 214. Get at us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, any podcast platform listen that you're listening on, as well as YouTube. And this has been the Mainstream Mass Podcast, and we will catch you guys in the next one.
Bye-bye.